What's up, everybody? Welcome back to part two of our Trade Deadline 2023 episode. I'm Burke, and as always, joined by Sean. Sean, what's going on, man?
Not much. Just getting excited for episode two of this week. Get to break down the rest of the trades.
Yeah, it was a very eventful week leading up to the trade deadline, and then, you know, there were some trades that happened on that day itself, but, you know, more minor ones.
Yeah,
there wasn't too many of the, like, we find out way later in the day that this one just snuck in. Like, previous years we've had, like, you know, you find out at, like, a couple hours past, like, oh my god, we've got another surprise trade to announce that just snuck in.
Yeah, I definitely picked a good day to be out of cell service all day when none of the important trades really happened on deadline day. So it wasn't like I had to fish through 7,000 notifications when I got service back.
Yeah, I know. I probably spammed you a little bit, but it would have been way more if some of these trades hadn't happened like earlier in the week. So it's helpful. You picked the right day. So I mean, like, the tail end of the last episode, we were talking about how it looked like Columbus was going to move out Korpisalo and Gavrikov to the Kings. There was kind of some traction there, and then it kind of just blew up after we stopped recording, as we kind of anticipated something would come in, like, right after. Mm-hmm. And so the Columbus Blue Jackets acquired Jonathan Quick, a 2023 first that's conditional. If the Kings do not qualify for the 2023 playoffs, Columbus instead receives two second round picks, 2023 and 2024. So it's kind of a neat little condition, I thought.
I've never seen one like that I can recall, actually. It's usually if it's not a first, it's a second or something like that. But yeah, I've never seen it be two second round picks. Interesting.
Yeah, it's kind of an interesting switch. I'm just curious if the Kings don't have a first next year. No, they haven't. So I guess they just decided. Yeah,
if he doesn't actually help us get to the playoffs, we're not gonna give up more.
And then maybe the Kings, I don't know, whatever. Maybe they wanted the first in the event that they missed, and then they were able to negotiate that. But anyway, and a 2024 third in exchange for Korpisalo and Gavrikov.
So, pardon me, the first impression on this one is, like, the Blue Jackets were asking that first and a third for Gavrikov. That seemed to be the asking price on the market. So they go and get, you know, the first and the third, I assume, for Gavrikov, but then they basically just swap Quick for Korpisalo, unless they maybe lightened on their ask for Gavrikov, and it's kind of like a package deal in general instead of just a bunch of pieces put together.
Yeah, I think I saw some things that were saying, like, Quick had to be thrown in for cap reasons, like that.
Yes,
Columbus really had no interest in, like, taking him on as a player,
and as we'll find out, you know, later in this episode, that was true.
Yeah, so it was interesting, you know, trade out your franchise goalie, the guy that won all the cups. It was taken, I think, pretty roughly by the team. I think he found out, like, immediately after they played that he was being traded, and then he was flying back with the team while being traded.
Well, they'll do, like, a mid-air swap. They'll have him, like, jump from one plane to the other.
Yeah, so it was kind of a mixed reaction amongst Kings fans because, I mean, Quick hasn't been good, but he is a legend in their franchise, so it sucks to see, you know, a guy get just sent to, like, one of the bottom teams in the league.
Yeah, to finish out his career, it's just kind of like, why not just let him stay for a little bit and retire as a King, you know?
Yeah, right after they unveiled, like, a Dustin Brown statue outside of the rink, and, like, you know, they've had, like, I think of some reunions of some of those teams this season too. So, I mean, at the end of the day, it's a business, and, like, it makes sense. It makes the Kings a better team, undoubtedly. You know, Korpisalo's got good numbers this season on Columbus, and Gavrikov improves their blue line. So it makes sense, but it's kind of one of those tough pills to swallow, right, for Kings fans and some of the players on the Kings too. Like, you know, Doughty and Kopitar, who've been there with Quick during those cup runs. So it's a surprising one, but Yeah. So almost immediately after this trade came through, it was like, you know, there was talk of Columbus is looking to move Quick.
Yeah, because I think there was talk about, like, Quick just didn't even want to go to Columbus. It was like, oh, what if he pulls one of those, I'm just not going to report there and retires or something.
Yeah, I mean, I joked with you, like, maybe he'll pull a Jeff Carter, like, reverse mode where, you know, he doesn't want to go to Columbus, mm-hmm. complains, and then they trade him back to the Kings or something. But, yeah. So anyway, that was the first one on in March. So kind of a big trade. Definitely improves the situation in LA. I like this trade for them, despite the, you know, the legendary goalie moving out of town.
Yeah.
It makes their tandem a lot stronger of Copley and Corpusalo. Kind of a, I don't know, what do you want to call them? 1A, 1B, but sort of that situation. And then Gavrikov, you know, good defender.
Yeah, I personally, I'm not as high on Corpusalo as others might be, but you're right. He does have decent numbers on a really bad team this season so far. So one would hope that going to a team like the Kings that are better, that are more defensively sound, because like the Kings have that weird goal differential thing that for most of the season they were such a good team, but they had a negative goal differential. A lot of that is on the goalies because they have some of the like advanced stats sites apparently have them as like negative 30 to 40 goals saved above expected. So like they're giving up so many more goals than they should, and then they get Corpusalo, who isn't like a star goalie, but he is much better than what they had been getting most of the season.
Well, I think another thing to keep in mind too is do you remember that year that Columbus played Toronto?
Yeah, that was Corpusalo, right?
Yeah, it was Corpusalo. He like absolutely shut the door. Like, I'm just looking now. He had like a 1.9 goals against average, a 941 save percentage.
Playoff performer confirmed.
Two shutouts. He was the difference maker. Like, he just was so good in playoffs. So, I mean, that was a few years ago, and he's kind of, his numbers in regular season have kind of fluctuated since then. But, you know, he can be a playoff guy for them if they get in. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know if he's going to be a long-term guy there because they've got, you know, Cal Peterson signed to a weird contract and some other stuff going on. So I don't know if he'll stick around long term, but if it's a good fit, maybe. But then they've got to figure out what to do.
I'm sure there's another team in the league that'd be willing to take on random cap hit for no reason.
Yeah, I'm sure.
But the fit for Gavrikov too, we'll mention him. The fit for Gavrikov is pretty good as well. Like that, just that quiet shutdown defender. Like their left side is pretty solid. Like Mikey Anderson is one of the most underrated defenders in the league, and he's not going to get much attention just because of the style he plays. And Sean Durzi, I think he's been okay. I don't think he's been as like flashy, but he's still got 34 points in 60 games. So that's pretty good.
He's been good on power play.
Yeah. So that's you know.
Yeah. Again, I don't think he's great defensively. So you know, if you combine like that type of player with a guy like Gavrikov, I think it would be really beneficial to the team.
Yeah, which could work because they've got Durzi listed as someone who can play both sides, so Gavrikov and Durzi could be a pairing if they need that that shutdown quiet defender with a more flashy offensive guy like Durzi.
I think Durzi's right-handed too, so
he is. Yeah,
it would make sense. I mean, maybe he plays left just for like the offense, like getting the shot off.
Yeah.
But I think it's a good trade for LA. Like, I think it just makes sense, and you know, it's they got some good value getting it kind of a 2-for-1, and
especially considering what the original ask for that type of defender was, they didn't really give up anything extra to get both assets.
Yeah, they basically got Gavrikov, like you said, the price that they were asking for Gavrikov, and they threw in a goalie that's better than the one that you had.
Yeah, so pretty good.
Yeah. Move on. Lars Eller got traded to the Colorado Avalanche. The Capitals retained 31%.
Mm-hmm.
So the Avalanche are paying 69% of his salary. And they got a 2025 second round pick. So, you know, a few years out, but I think that was what the Capitals were looking for Eller was a second. So they ended up getting it. And
yeah,
I'm happy with that.
Yeah. Given the other forwards that have gone for a second, like that's a pretty good value for someone like Eller, who's not, he's not like a top six forward. It was weird. You and I were talking about this after the trade. Like, Colorado needed a second line center, but then they trade for Eller. So we were kind of like, is that the role they want him to play? But you said Bednar said he was going to be 3C.
Yeah, there was a quote from Bednar saying, like, you know, we gotta come in and play 3C. We need help down the middle. So
okay.
He specifically said third line center. So
which I think that's...
I guess they want Comfort to stay in line two.
Comfort's been... I've got him in a fantasy league. He puts up a lot of points. Like, surprising. For the type of player he is, the pedigree he has, he puts up quite a few points. So
I don't watch Colorado very much, so I don't know, like, how he's doing, like... on both sides of the ice, but if it's working, whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
Like Eller, I don't know if I would label him this anymore, but he used to be the perfect third line center. I mean, he's slowed down a bit and he's not as good as he was, but he's still pretty solid. So if you can keep him there, that works.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw a thing too that Eller got to the first game like something like 15 minutes before like warmups or something, and he was he wasn't able to talk to Bednar before that. So he basically like talked to Bednar at the rink and like learned their system and like conversation.
Wow.
And then like I think he played in that game, so it's like, wow.
Just hops on the ice and YOLOs it.
Yeah. So pretty whirlwind, but he said he packed like an extra bag because he was told that he might get moved during the Caps road trip, so he was ready and, you know, to get traded to a contender like that is pretty
be cool for him to get another cup.
Yeah, I mean he was clutch in the playoff run for the Caps, scored the Stanley Cup winning goal, so you know he could be another guy like Lekkonen for them.
Exactly,
just getting a clutch goal. I mean, I don't know if he'll end every playoff series like Lekkonen did, but
finisher.
Who knows? Anyway, I like the trade. Just get something for him. Probably weren't going to keep him. So, next up is this is one of the trades that was like, why? The Vancouver Canucks acquired Philip Hronek and a 2023 fourth round pick from the Detroit Red Wings in exchange for a 2023 first round pick that they originally got from the Islanders in the Horvat deal and a 2023 second round pick. So they're not going in on picks.
Okay. So Quinn Hughes, sometime after this trade, made a public comment saying that I don't remember the exact words, but saying something along the lines of like, they don't want to be here through a rebuild.
Yeah.
So I imagine the message behind the scenes between like him and Pettersson is if they're not going to compete right away, they don't want to stay. So if that's the message that the Canucks GM and Rutherford have to go with, then it makes sense why they're making these types of weird trades to try and like speed up the process. But mm-hmm. It's also looking like it's just going to be some weird half-assed thing that's going to result in just more mediocrity because they're never really going to do it right, because you can't rebuild a team properly the way that they're doing it with these trades for developed players. They don't have a prospect pool to supplement anything or have, you know, depth or backup. They're just using all of their picks to acquire somewhat developed players who are okay-ish.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, like, it's like, in a vacuum, it's not a bad trade, right? Like, it's just the context of where Vancouver is that makes it a
yeah. Why is the 20? Why is the team that's like 25th or 26th in the league buying?
Yeah, yeah. It's like, yeah, Ronick's a good, like, right hand D that plays power play, that is like younger. Like, I think he's what, like 24?
Yeah, 23, I think. 23, 24.
He's got a year on his contract after this. He's having a good year offensively. it's like, yeah, like, you know, he's a young player that's got an extra year. A first and a second makes sense. But you also have, like, one of the best offensive D-men in the league already
mm-hmm.
in Quinn Hughes. And Hronek's value is based on power play usage. So Like, it's kind of like...
doesn't make sense.
You already have that type of player, and you needed a guy to play with that player rather than, like, you know, another offensive guy, because you've got these huge anchors on your blue line that, like, Tyler Myers and Oliver Ekman-Larsson, who's in, like, you know, everyone wants him to be bought out. It's like you needed a, like, an Eric Chernak type, you know, kind of like that, like, stable, reliable partner.
Like a Gavrikov type.
For Quinn Hughes. Yeah, exactly.
I mean, they play the same side, so it wouldn't work, but, like, that's the type.
Right-hand D don't grow on trees. Like, they're pretty rare. I think there's more of them now than there used to be.
It seems to be the market, like, for them is drying up a bit when there's more.
But, like, it's just a surprising one because, yeah, the player type you already have, and they're not going to play together. So, and, yeah, I like Roenick. Roenick's a good offensively-minded defenseman, but he's not going to solve your defensive problems.
Exactly.
And you should be keeping the picks because it looks like the Islanders are in a race here to make playoffs. And, you know, you might get they might keep their pick this year, but I think it's unprotected next year, right? So I just doesn't make sense. And, like, I was watching the hockey guy on YouTube. I love that guy. I've talked about him on here before. And, like, when they made the... they made the Horvat trade. He was like, okay, like, we're stocking up on picks. I like it. And then they made this trade, and he's like,
well,
like,
yeah,
what the hell?
That's it.
Like, I thought we were, he's like, I made a video being happy that we're keeping picks and we're looking like we're selling. We know we trade out, like, Luke Shen. Like, we're getting picks back, and then we're making trades like this, and it's like, why can we never hold on to first-round picks?
Yeah, and why can't they make a clear direction? Because it's like doing what Minnesota's doing, but worse.
Yeah, I just, it's like, I get that it matches kind of what they said they wanted to do, but it's like, it just, like, the player type doesn't make sense to me.
Exactly. That's the biggest part. Like, you want to make a weird trade, and... sorry, I just got distracted because I found that quote where Quinn Hughes, he actually said publicly, we don't want to be here for a rebuild and have to wait.
Yeah.
So, you know, if that's the direction that the players, that the star players that they need to retain want, then, like, Alvin and Rutherford, they can't just say, no, you're going to wait and go through a rebuild, because then they're going to lose all of those players.
It's just interesting because it's like, what, were they in on Chychrun? Because that would have made more sense to me.
Yes. That actually would have been, because, like, Chychrun cost about the same as Roenick. I think there's, like, an extra pick in the Chychrun trade. But Chychrun is a much better, well-rounded defender who would actually improve the Canucks' defense.
And I think he's more cost-controlled. I think he's got another year on his deal compared to Roenick.
Yeah, for about the same price as well. But I think with Chychrun, was there a sense of Chychrun being able to choose where he went? I can't remember if he had,
probably,
like, a no trade or anything.
I mean, they probably wanted to do right by him.
Yeah.
But I just wonder if they were asking about him. Because it's like, I think we might have talked about this, like, when they made that OEL trade. But it's like, at that point, Chychrun was already, like, the guy in Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he had replaced OEL as, like, you know, running the power play and being, like, the number one minutes guy. So it's like, why did you expect the guy who's, like, not number one in Arizona to come in and be, like, your guy in Vancouver? So, yeah, it's just surprising.
They make a
surprising
lot of weird
move.
Moves.
And, like, I like Roenick. I do like him. And I think it's a great move for the Red Wings, because they could get a first-round pick.
Mm-hmm. That could end up being a lottery pick if the Islanders miss in a very competitive East.
Yeah, it's just like a price that you don't say no to. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if it was like who initiated this trade, but for Yzerman, I think it's a good trade because it's like, you know, Seider can be on your power play. You don't need Roenick. You're able to move that money around, and, you know, he signed Dylan Larkin longer term. So it's a good cap move for them. So, yeah, It's just a surprising, like, what direction are you going in kind of move.
Mm-hmm.
And then, yeah, all the talk is, like, I think this also puts the Canucks over the cap next season. So they've got to move something.
I think.
They've got to figure it out.
I think they were shopping Connor Garland, but they didn't get. They were shopping Connor Garland, but didn't get the right offer for him or something. So that would free up $5 million right there. If they dump him in the draft.
They're going to have a busy offseason, I think, where they're going to make some more smart moves.
5D chess everyone here.
Yeah, it's just.
Oh, yeah. Like, Cap Friendly says they have 15 players under contract, but they have $1.7 million in projected cap space.
Yeah, but I also think that they might have some players on LTIR right now that would be coming back.
Mikheyev, Pearson, Poolman.
I think Mikheyev at least is coming back, and what he's at, like, fucking
4.7.
A stupid contract.
4.75.
So, they're gonna have to figure something out. And like, they had a press conference and Patrick Alvin literally compared their team to Tampa Bay. I don't know if you saw that, but he was like, "Well, Tampa Bay won the cup while they had no space in cap."
No.
And fans were loving that. They're like, "We are not the same."
The Vancouver Lightning are at it again.
Yeah. It's like, yeah, you're right. They were at zero cap space. But
most teams are at zero cap space. Doesn't mean you're any good.
Yeah.
Look at Montreal.
They have better players signed for less because people are taking a discount to play there.
And because they aren't wasting money on things that aren't contributing to the lineup. All of their money is better allocated than Vancouver's. Because the money that they're spending is on players who are better value. Like, they're not spending $6 million in Tampa on Ekman Larson.
Or Tyler Myers.
Like, that $6 million is going towards really good players in Tampa. They can get more with their money.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I was thinking about it, and it's like, you know, I think I sent you, like, a screenshot of the Washington Capitals blue line, you know, at times throughout this season.
Yeah.
It's like they've got, like, two guys over $1 million, and it's like, had more confidence in that decor than, like, in Vancouver. Like, you know, it's just, they're so overpaid in Vancouver. It's ridiculous. Anyway, it's a confusing one. We'll move on.
What, you want to turn this into another Canucks trashing episode?
I mean, it always has the potential of coming back, but I don't know. It's weird. So Carolina kind of, I think this was their last move. I think, they acquired Shane Gostisbehere from Arizona for 2026 third. It's kind of,
I didn't quite understand this one at first because
piece.
I
think he actually,
go ahead. You're really choppy and cutting out right now.
Oh, is it better
right now? It is. Yeah. It cut out as soon as you finished talking or saying what the Gostisbehere trade was.
Okay. I think I'll just turn my stream off. I think he already got a goal in his first game against Arizona, but seems like a kind of a strange one because they've already got, like, a pretty solid D line, and they have Burns that can play power play, and Brady Shea's been playing power play.
Yeah, that was my first thought, is like, why get Gostisbehere? Because he's basically just the power play guy when you already have Burns, and then you let me know that Shea was playing power play too. So it's kind of like, where does Gostisbehere fit in here?
Yeah, I don't know. Seems kind of weird, but I mean, they're one of the best teams in the league, so who knows? But more depth at blue line, I guess. And good for Arizona, you know, like they basically got paid to take Gostisbehere from Philly. And then they ended up getting more by trading him. So
that's like, you know, that's solid asset management right there.
Yeah.
Honestly. Yeah. Like, get assets out of Philly to take the contract and then trade the contract away for more asset.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty good. And this is an interesting one too. for Arizona that they're trading for a 2026 pick in this trade. So they're doing that thing. They're spreading out these draft picks over so many years that they're going to have this pipeline of prospects funneling in like every single year. That they've got 21 picks in the first three rounds over the next three drafts. They've got like 7, 8, 9 picks each draft. So this is going to be really great for their prospect pipeline, because they're not going to have 18 players ready to make the NHL at once. They're going to have like a handful per season, which will help sustain their future competitive window so much better than stacking up on this year's draft.
Yeah. Yeah, it's smart. So it's a good trade, I think, for Arizona. Just get something for a guy that you can sell.
Mm-hmm.
And then they also shipped out another defenseman here, Jacob Chychrun, to the Ottawa Senators in exchange for a conditional 2023 first-round pick, which is top 5 protected, which just carries over to the next year. 2024 second-round pick, which is also conditional, which is kind of interesting because it's an ambitious condition, but it's if Ottawa makes it to the 2023 conference final, the pick becomes a 2024 first-round top 10 protected. If the pick is top 10, the pick becomes Ottawa's 2025 first unprotected. So it's very ambitious, but potentially 2 first-round picks here.
Mm-hmm.
And then another second in 2026. So, you know, again, layering the years in which they're getting picks. A lot cheaper than I thought that Chychrun was going to be. You know, they basically have been holding him out of the lineup for like, what, 2 years or something. And he finally gets freed. And it seems like it's a really good fit in my head. And it's cool to see that like Chychrun's got like family in Ottawa. I think I saw a thing where like he brought his grandpa to like practice today.
Yeah, to hang out at the rink or something. And Dorian said like, just bring him every day. Let him hang out here. Like that's really cool to see. You know, the family aspect, like you said, to be able to play in front of family and to like have your grandparent come and hang out at the rink with you. Like that's just so cool.
Yeah. So, and then you know, just talking about Ottawa's defense now, like they've got a pretty great core
stacked.
Now. Yeah.
Like, that's going to look good.
Chabot, Chychrun, which is unreal. But they've also, like, you add Jake Sanderson to that. And apparently Eric Branstrom's having a bit of a bounce back this season and looking better.
Yeah, now that he's been more in the lineup more consistently, I think he's kind of starting to find his feet a little bit.
Yeah, and then, you know, they've got, like, a guy like Zub in there, too. So, yeah, I think that they're making some good moves. And that Zaitsev trade that happened a little earlier in the year makes more sense now, where they're clearing that cap space.
Exactly.
In order to make room for this. And I saw some interesting news about this, too, where apparently the price that Arizona was asking for some other teams was actually higher than this.
Interesting.
So like it was like Buffalo specifically. They wanted more from Buffalo as opposed to Ottawa.
That's
so I guess they were thinking Buffalo might finish higher on the standings than Ottawa. But, yeah, so I think it's a good value deal for Ottawa, where they, you know, they get a guy that's signed for this year and 2 more years
at a good price,
who could be a key part of their team for, you know, quite a while.
A
24
year old defender, he's still got, you know, he's not even in his prime as a defender yet in his best years.
Yeah, and he's like the same age as like Tkachuk, and like if they end up keeping like DeBrincat, I think he's like a year younger than him.
Yeah,
Batherson.
Yeah, so he fits in the core.
Yeah, so unbelievable value there, I think. And yeah, Chychrun's a great player. So
it was a bit concerning in his first game when he went into the boards awkwardly and twisted his knee and was down hurt on the ice for a while, and it's like but I think he stayed in the game. He just went off a bit gingerly first.
Yeah that was scary, but he ended up staying in the game and being fine. And yeah, I should mention that was the debut game for Patrick Kane too on the Rangers, and the Senators got to play, you know, they got to upset and they won, and they've been one of the hottest teams since like the end of January. So
yeah.
I hope that they make it into playoffs, because I think it would be really cool to see them back in there.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, on that note, just looking at the Eastern Conference standings for those wild card spots, but it's like Pittsburgh and the Islanders, 71-70 points respectively. Then Buffalo, Ottawa, Florida, and Washington all have 66 points, and Detroit's got 65. So that's going to be a bit of a bloodbath. It, you know, there's a bit of a cushion, but the Islanders have a lot more games played than a couple of the teams below them, so could be very, very close at the end.
Yeah. I hope Ottawa gets in.
I do too.
I think it'd be just awesome to see Brady Tkachuk in playoffs.
He's such a great player type for the playoffs.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's like they're doing this without like Norris too. Like, you know, like one of their best centers.
Exactly.
I like this trade for them. It's like, why not go in this season? And if it doesn't work, like, you've already kind of set it for next season. Like,
exactly.
You know, it shows, like, DeBrincat, like, yeah, we're a good team now. Like, you should re-sign here.
I think that was a thing one of the Senators players said, like, we've shown that we deserve to be, like, a team that's buying. Something like that came out of somewhere in the Sens organization, that it's like, you know, Dorian can go in and buy a player because we've shown that we're good enough.
Yeah, I think Dorian had a quote where he was talking about, like, if there's a game that they played against the Bruins, and I think they lost, but it was like a tough battle game.
Right.
And he was like, yeah, we should buy.
Yeah.
Like, we're competitive.
We can hold our own against this team, the Bruins. Mm-hmm. I think we're good. Like, we can buy now.
Yeah. So we'll see if they can keep the heater that they're on going and, you know, force their way in. It's going to be a dramatic finish in the East for sure.
Mm-hmm.
We'll move on. Some quick ones here. Pittsburgh sent Teddy Bluger to the Vegas Golden Knights for a guy I've never heard of, and I thought his name was Defibrillator, but it's Peter DeLiberatore, and a 2024 third. Tampa Bay sent Vlad Namestnikov to San Jose at 50% retained for Mikey Aisimont, who's been bouncing around the league a bit this season. I think he's been, like, claimed on waivers by a couple teams, and I think he was on the Jets at one point and then got claimed by San Jose.
Yeah, that was the interesting part of this trade, as we'll find out later on, that it's just, like, this really weird roundabout trade that the guy who left Winnipeg to go on waivers ended up in Tampa Bay, and then Namestnikov, through a couple of trades, as we'll find out later, ended up in Winnipeg.
Yeah. It's like, well, okay, why didn't you just straight up?
You could have just straight up traded him.
There was a couple trades where it's like, why didn't you just do a three-way trade? But I guess it's more complicated and more complex to do it that way.
Yeah.
But anyway, move on. Pittsburgh then used some of their cap space that they cleared. They picked up Michael Granlund from Nashville in exchange for 2023 second.
It's a very Pittsburgh move.
Yeah, definitely.
You know,
a
veteran, an older veteran player, depth forward. You know, that it's a very Pittsburgh move to pick someone up like that at the deadline.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, before this came out, it was rumored that they were really looking at Brock Besser. And then this trade came out and it's like, okay, well, that's the death knell for that trade. Like, it's not happening. Boston acquired Tyler Bertuzzi at 50% retained from the Detroit Red Wings in exchange for a 2024 first that is top 10 protected and a 2025 fourth round pick. So, you know, Detroit really looking at the East and saying, we're not going for a big push here.
Yeah, this is that point that I made in the last episode, that all of the, like, so many of these Eastern teams are competing in the same year. Why isn't anyone being like, yeah, we're not going to compete this year and just stack up for the future and like save their assets to compete next year when everyone else doesn't have anything to give up? So Detroit seems to be doing that. They're like, okay, there's too many teams in front of us. We'll just sell off and like collect assets again and wait for another year.
Yeah, I think it's smart. And apparently like the negotiations between Bertuzzi and the team were just going nowhere. So smart. I mean, he's got injury issues too. And they've had to go to arbitration before. So I think it's a really shrewd move for Yzerman to be able to get a first.
Uh-huh.
And you know, and another pick for him.
And for Boston, I mean, Bertuzzi's a fairly solid Boston-type player. Bit of a forward with an edge, forward with some energy and grit. And I think Taylor Hall just got put on LTIR, and they weren't sure when he was going to be back, so it's probably, apt to bring in an approximately equivalent winger.
Yeah, there was some grumbling after this trade because it was like they officially put Hall and Nick Foligno on LTIR after this trade. And so they're like, oh, this seems like a cap compliance issue. And it's like, they're not the first team to do this.
No. And also, like, it's just Hall's been injured for a bit, so, like,
yeah,
you know, he's obviously injured.
and they paid, right? Like, they're not doing this for free. Like, they gave up assets for this, and the Red Wings retained, so they could fit him. I mean, that's how they got Orlov. They retained. I don't know. I think, yeah, he's a very Boston-type player. I think that, you know, they're really just going all in. Their lineup is just looking more and more stacked with all these trades.
It's interesting. This is the closest in the cap era we've seen to these super teams being made again. Like what Colorado and Detroit and New York, the Rangers used to do, where they'd bring in every single star player they could because they could afford it. It's the closest we've seen to that happening again.
Yeah, and like you look at their cap friendly, and it's like a solid chunk of their forward core is like just done after the season. They're all on expiring deals. And then with that Pasta extension that they did as well, signing him for 8 years, 11.2, I think. It's going to be harder for them to do this sort of stuff, right? With that big contract, because he's making like about half that right now. So they're able to, you know, squeeze some more guys in there. So why not go all in before that happens?
Exactly. It's kind of, you know, the team is aging with that aging core. You don't know how many more years they have left. So it's like, okay, we're doing extremely well this year. Best chance in the league to win the cup, like historic season. We're going to stack up. We're going to sell. We're going to buy, and go all in on this year.
All of that just gets swept by the Ottawa Senators in the first round.
that would be absolutely hilarious.
Oh, man. I mean, the Tampa had that historic season, right?
Exactly.
That happened to them. So
regular season doesn't translate to playoffs.
Anything is possible, yeah. So Arizona, this was kind of a funny one. They took on Jacob Voracek's cap hit in his contract. He signed for like a few years, $8.2 million from Columbus, and they got a 2023 sixth-round pick in exchange for John Gillies. It's Arizona now has such an interesting cap because I think it's, what was that tweet? It was like 57% of their cap hit is LTIR or just IR, retaining salary, and just like weird contracts like this.
Yeah.
So,
well, here, I mean, on IR, they've got Jakub Voracek, Shea Weber, Andrew Ladd, and Brian Little for $27 million. They've got another $4 million in retained salary for Nick Bjugstad, Patrick Kane, and Oliver Ekman-Larsson. So it's like they have such a small cap hit that they don't even need to use the LTIR space. And looking at their active roster, that's about $45 million in players on their active roster, compared to the $30 million that is in injury reserve and dead cap.
That's so crazy.
And like, the one that got me right before we started recording, their current cap space, or their current cap projected cap hit, probably, pardon me, $67.2 million. Their current cap space is $68.9 million. They have somehow almost have $70 million in cap space, in current cap space.
Yeah, it's like they made these moves just to stay like at the floor so that they don't get like fined.
Yeah.
It's just crazy.
It's like all those players on injured reserve are just like, I'm only here so I don't get fined.
Yeah, exactly. It is just unreal that they're able to do this.
It's also interesting. They only have 40 contracts signed. They don't have many of their prospects signed right now. That's interesting because a lot of teams are a lot closer to the 50. Like they're kind of shipping out random, you know, AHLers to free up a contract slot.
Yeah. I don't understand Arizona. Like,
you know, they seem to be doing something really smart here. You know, Mitch, in the same way that we're seeing the top teams do the super team thing, buying all the stuff that they can, we're seeing Arizona do this. Yeah, the complete opposite.
Super team.
the super draft pick team, the super
all-star
cap space team.
Reserve. Yeah. Yeah.
But I have to imagine, because this is the most extreme, this type of thing with the injured reserve contract dumping seems to be like the most extreme it's ever gotten. And with the league already saying, like, yeah, this isn't going to happen anymore, they're probably in the next GM meetings, I think there's some right away, if not over the offseason, are going to be like, okay, no, they're going to have to, like, rearrange how they do LTIR and how they handle this type of trade.
Yeah, or some of these guys are going to have to retire, and then teams will have a penalty.
Yeah.
Right?
Like if LTIR...
overage contracts and stuff.
Yeah, like some sort of evaluation that if a player on LTIR is deemed that they're never going to play again, like they're not going to factor into any cap calculation.
Yeah, like Shea Weber. Like,
I think Voracek, too. Back. I think that was the thing with Voracek, too, that earlier this season. He wasn't going to be able to come back.
Yeah.
And like Andrew Ladd and Brian Little, too, the same thing.
Yeah, none of them are coming back. So it's like, come on. Like, they're retired. Yeah, like they're not.
I think that
wasn't it
a thing that Shea Weber was about to start working in the front office somewhere, but it would be a bit of a conflict of interest to be like still on under contract with the team.
Well, I don't recall about Shea Weber, but I remember that happened with Matt Murray because the Stars wanted, or not Matt Murray, sorry, Ben Bishop, sorry.
Okay, I think that might have been who it was.
They wanted Ben Bishop to work in their front office, but he is still under contract, so they were like, "No, we can't do that."
Yeah.
But the NHL has no problem of Chris Pronger being fucking head of Department of Player Safety while he's under contract, like, with Arizona. Like, that's not a conflict of interest. But a guy working for one team, like, that's not okay. But a guy who's signed to a team working for the league,
yeah.
Like, that's fine.
That's a like, weird one. That's a bad one.
Yeah. Anyway, it's weird. I wonder if they're going to look at changing some of this stuff, the way it works, because it's like, yeah, there's so many guys that are on LTIR or just injured reserve who, like, they still count against the cap. So it's like, they're not playing. They're retired.
Exactly.
Like, yeah, a team should, they shouldn't be able to move that. Like, it just seems so weird. Like, you signed this guy to this big deal or you traded for him and he got hurt. You shouldn't be able to move that contract to a team that has space. It's so weird.
Well, I mean, yeah, just looking at this random like meme picture that popped up here in one of my feeds. You know, imagine a team that has Datsyuk, Pronger, Weber, Hossa, Voracek, and Little. That team is the Arizona Coyotes.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, it's stupid. Something's fishy there. Anyway, move on. Another Columbus move. They dished out Jonathan Quick at 50% retained to the Vegas Golden Knights for Michael Hutchinson and a 2025 seventh round pick. So they ended up moving him, got something back for him.
So they basically just traded Korpisalo for Hutchinson in the seventh, which is not much.
Yeah, and it's just funny that it's Vegas.
A team that's going to be competing with the Kings, and I'm just taking a quick look at the division here.
And the whole Flurry backstab situation.
Yeah.
Like, they were the bad guys in that, but they get to be the good guy in this one. And then, yeah, Quick is going to be very determined to beat LA if they ever suit him up against games.
Yeah, because the thing is, the Pacific, Vegas is at 80 points in first place, Los Angeles at 78 in second place, Seattle and Edmonton at 76 points in third and fourth. So the division's close enough that they could realistically still Vegas and LA meet up in the first round of the playoffs.
Yeah.
Like, grudge match. Wouldn't that be something for Quick, like potentially you know, the last playoff series of his career, last games of his career, to go out playing against the team that he spent his entire career
with. Yeah. Yeah, it could be interesting. There's the drama is ready if it lines up that way. It could be very, very entertaining. I guess we'll move on an Oilers trade here. So they got Nick Bjugstad at 50% retained from Arizona and Cam Dineen in exchange for Michael Kesselring in a 2023 third. So what are your thoughts on this one?
This was the exact acquisition that I figured and guessed the Oilers would make. Like as soon as Arizona was like, oh, Nick Bjugstad is being shopped or something, I was like, yeah, that's an Oilers trade. That's a very Ken Holland trade. You know, random veteran depth forward for a third round pick is very Ken Holland. I don't understand quite why Kesselring and Dineen were added into the trade. Like, that part doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me, but I'm assuming there's some sort of roster composition or player evaluation thing, because Kesselring was a decent prospect having a good offensive season in Bakersfield in the AHL. He's also a right defender. And Dineen's like a smaller, I'm just checking his stats here, but he's, you know, some level of offensive ability, 35 points in 50 games this year in the AHL. But I don't quite understand that part of it.
I don't know. Just
but Bjugstad's
throwing him in for the sake of it.
Yeah, must be it. Bjugstad's not going to move the needle at all. However, the interesting part, that 4%, that 4% that they got Nashville to retain on Ekholm gave them exactly the amount with the retained on this one to end up with zero cap space. So there's a method to the madness of getting Nashville to retain $250,000.
Yeah,
on Ekholm,
yeah,
so they can pull
it
exactly
all works
this
out in the end. Yeah, that's funny.
And have literally $0 left, which is going to be interesting in later this week, I think, if they have, I don't know if Kane's on LTIR, but when they try and bring Evander Kane back into the lineup, it might cause some issues. Let me see. Oh, he's not on LTIR, so it might be okay. I don't think they ever put him on IR or anything. He's just not playing.
Yeah, I think he's just been out. I don't think he was on LTIR.
No.
So
they won't have any issue there.
Cap it's still included there. I mean, depth going into playoffs is good.
Yeah, the Oilers have been rolling with 11 forwards and 7 defenders for months, so it's kind of like this gives them the option to go back to a 12-6 if they want, just to have that extra, you know, proven veteran player, or they just, you know, have an extra someone to swap in if someone needs a game off.
Yeah. Yeah, it makes sense. Move on. The Dallas Stars got Max Domi and Dylan Wells in exchange for Anton Khudobin. So Dobby being shipped out. 2025 second round pick as well going to Chicago. So Domi was having a good season in Chicago. I think he was playing with Patrick Kane for the most part.
Yeah.
I saw some highlights. He was making some plays like to Kane, though. It wasn't just him like getting fed by Kane. So he's having a good year.
It sounded like he was liking it in Chicago too. Like he kind of found a bit of a niche or a bit of a home there. So
yeah, I think he should fit in well with the Stars. I think he's making his debut today on Saturday here. So I think he'll be good, and like he'll be good going into playoffs. And he also adds a bit more of a secondary scoring touch to the Stars. You know, at certain times of the year, they have struggled with that. So I think it's a smart move. And, you know, Khudobin was in the AHL. So I think it's really just a second-round pick, and you clear whatever was unable to be buried there by Khudobin in the AHL. So they didn't really give up a whole lot for this.
No.
So
take after these trades here, have you looked at Chicago's scoring lineup or scoring standings?
Yes, I have. It is god awful.
After trading out Domi and Patrick Kane, the leading scorers of the Chicago Blackhawks are Jonathan Toews with 28 points in 46 games and Seth Jones with 28 points in 51 games.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, I'm sure he's real glad he signed that 8-year extension. Or
yeah, no kidding.
Whatever his fucking deal is, like
8-year contract, but he's making $9 million a season, so I'm sure he's not too unhappy.
Yeah, no kidding.
But
you just got no one to play with now, except for your brother, I guess.
Exactly. They, thinking, so Chicago is about 20 games left. They're playing about a half a point per game pace. I mean, Taves is out for the rest of the season, I think, anyways. But they could have the season here where their leading scorer has less than 40 points.
Oof.
Looking at the pace, and that's, you know, 20 games left, half a point per game, just over half a point per game, he could potentially finish with less than 40 points.
Jeez.
That's pretty bad.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's one of the trades we skipped over, but they did get Anders Bjork for free from Buffalo, so maybe he's the savior. Maybe he'll get a quick 40 points.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, I mean, they're full-on tank mode at this point.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what they should be doing. So it's just going to be really bad to watch. Ugh. Yeah. Fun times in Chicago, seeing your franchise player get shipped out and getting, like, basically nothing for him.
Yeah. It's bad. 8 picks in the first 3 rounds of this draft, though, so that'll help in 4 years.
Yeah. Maybe they'll get 2 back-to-back, like, unreal players again.
Yeah, maybe.
We'll move on. We kind of talked about this one a little bit before the episode here, but St. Louis got Jacob Vrana at 50% retained. I think he's got 1 or 2 more seasons left after this one on his contract, from the Detroit Red Wings in exchange for Dylan McLaughlin in a 2025 7th. So essentially for free. Vrana was in that trade where he went to Detroit from Washington for Anthony Mantha and I think a first. And the first ended up being Casa, Sebastian Casa. So they could still win that trade. But it's looking like kind of a lose-lose because Mantha's not doing great in Washington, and Vrana, obviously they shipped him out for, like, peanuts here.
Well, I mean, if Casa is the other asset in the trade, then Detroit still wins because he's an insane goalie prospect.
Yeah. But, like, right now, it looks like it's not a great...
No.
But Casa could definitely turn out to be, like, a really, really good NHL goalie.
Yeah, you're right. So far, neither team has gotten anything out of it, with both of them being injured and out of the lineup for the most part.
Yeah, and so this one is just a relationship broken between Yzerman and the player here, so shipping him out. And it's a fairly decent reclamation project for the St. Louis Blues, like, low risk. You know, they're paying him like $2.6 million, which is far more, you know, it's a far better deal than, like, his full contract. If you can play in their top six rather than get buried in Detroit, where he wasn't really getting an opportunity after coming back. So, interesting trade. It's just kind of the one that popped up, and it's like, I kind of see why this is happening, but it's just interesting to see. I wasn't expecting it, but, you know, frees up a little bit of cap space for Detroit for next year, kind of like what we talked about. But it's just interesting to see, like, his value is just nothing at this point.
Yeah.
Or they wanted to get rid of him so badly that they didn't care what they got back.
Yeah, like, anything was better than nothing.
Yeah. LA got Zach MacEwen in exchange for Brendan Lemieux, and a 2024 fifth-round pick that is going to the Philadelphia Flyers. So I think Brendan Lemieux is a very Philadelphia-type player.
It's interesting because MacEwen and Lemieux were kind of similar players,
mm-hmm.
I feel. So that's kind of an interesting one that I think MacEwen's probably younger, though. That might be the reason LA wanted him.
Yeah, MacEwen's a bit cheaper. He doesn't bite people. I think they're the same age. But
oh, they actually are.
It's
crazy. I thought Lemieux was way older than that.
Yeah, I think MacEwen is a good energy guy that you know, can still stand up for guys. I'm not sure if he's maybe a little bit more disciplined, and just, like, most of his pims are from fights, but I never liked Brendan Lemieux, so I think it's a good move to get rid of him. But I don't know. It's kind of, yeah, they're kind of like the same type of guy. But it's whatever. Depth piece. Maybe he wasn't well liked in the room or something.
Maybe a bit too many people in the room.
Maybe. I mean, I know he's no Brady Kachuk's not a fan of him, so we'll move on. Had a three-way trade where Nick Bonino ends up going back to the Pittsburgh Penguins, where San Jose dealt him to Montreal to retain on him, and then he went to Pittsburgh. And then San Jose ended up getting 2023 seventh, 2024 fifth, and Montreal got a 2024 fifth for their trouble.
As well as the signing rights to Tony Sund.
Of course, Tony Sund.
Mm-hmm. And then San Jose got the signing rights for Arvid Henriksen as well. It's swapping signing rights for players. I don't quite understand that.
I think that's like a, there has to be something here. So we're just throwing in these guys that we have no intention of signing.
Actually, yeah, good point. Montreal's got to send something to San Jose for the troubles. Some sort of consideration there.
So, I mean, Nick Bonino, obviously part of the Cup teams for Pittsburgh, so yeah, he's going back.
Probably well liked and well remembered by the Pittsburgh core. So I imagine they were kind of like, yeah, let's bring him back.
Yeah, it is a depth piece at this point. There's no HBK line anymore. So we'll move on. Here's the Vlad Domestnikov full circle piece. He San Jose Sharks sent him to Winnipeg and got a 2025 fifth. So his final landing spot is Winnipeg,
which is it's such a weird one to go through waivers for the one guy to go through waivers, end up with Domestnikov's original team, and then Domestnikov goes through the team that claimed the other guy in waivers and gets to Winnipeg by extension. It's such a weird, convoluted way to make that deal.
It is weird. So we're into the final day here of the trade deadline too. So we are coming to the end, but Buffalo got Jordan Greenway from Minnesota in exchange for a 2023 second and a 2024 fifth. So
I think that's a good one.
Good trade for Buffalo. Get a guy that can play in the bottom six. Apparently he's having a good defensive season. And I was surprised. I think it was Shayna on Twitter was saying like Minnesota basically doesn't use Greenway on the PK, but he's like has really good defensive numbers. So this might be a guy that Buffalo can put on their PK.
Yeah, which would be great for them just to get a better option in their bottom six or on their third line.
Mm-hmm.
It really helps with their depth. And someone who like Greenway does have, you know, offensive capabilities. He's not completely incapable in that regard. Mm-hmm. He's had a quiet season this year, but you know, he's focusing more on the defensive side of things, then obviously the offense is gonna shy away a little bit. Mm-hmm. But Buffalo is also an offensively minded team this season, so maybe he'll get some extra chances. Maybe he'll kind of refine that game compared to Minnesota, that's had the entire team outside of Kaprizov has had incredible difficulty scoring. Yeah. So it makes sense that Greenway's offense would have dried up with the rest of the team.
Absolutely. Yeah, there was a point there where it was basically like three or four whole games where the Minnesota Wild didn't score a goal without Kaprizov on the ice.
Yeah, I think it at 5v5, it got up to like 400 minutes without Minnesota scoring a goal. Like there is a stretch where it was like a month between an even strength, like 5-on-5 goal that didn't have Kaprizov on the ice. Something insane like that.
Yeah, I remember there was one where it was like a solid chunk of games,
mm-hmm.
just total,
yeah,
where all their goals had him on the ice, including special teams. And it's just insane. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just, he is that team. Like, them bringing him in, like, I mean, we talked about it when his first year in the league, but like, he just dramatically changed that team's identity.
Yeah,
like
that's the first.
It's him.
in the Minnesota Wild's history, like the offensively talented players they've had are a list of, I can think of two, Marian Gaborik and Kirill Kaprizov.
Yeah.
So, you know, he changes, like you say, he changes the entire dynamic and identity of the team, just having a player like Kaprizov in there. And, like, I was very wrong about his skill set. I thought he would kind of, like, fizzle out and not be as prominent as he was. I figured he'd kind of max out as, like, a, you know, 60, 70 point guy. No. He is good. Yeah, he is dominant.
He is so fun to watch,
too. He keeps this up in the Wild get better. Like, he could find himself in the MVP race.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, he should be in the MVP race just because...
Exactly.
Like, those stats, yeah. Right? Like, the fact that they go, like, a month 5-on-5 without scoring, without him on the ice, like, that's definitely...
And MVP they still find themselves early. Second in their division. Like... I think it's balanced out a bit now, but they're 7-1-2 in their last 10. They're still second in the division, and they just went through like a solid month where nobody but Kaprizov was producing. No line other than Kaprizov's line was. So he should absolutely be getting some MVP this season.
Yeah, he's such a absolute treat to watch too. Like, he just skates circles around it, whole teams, and makes sweet passes, and yeah,
he's very Patrick Kane like.
He is an absolute game changer. I mean, maybe this will dramatically change the Minnesota Wild's fate, but they acquired Oscar Sundqvist. So, absolute offensive dynamo from Detroit, 2023 fourth going to Detroit. So,
oh, Minnesota, I got them mixed
basically
up. I was for some reason I had was it Elmer Soderblom? That's who I thought this was. Yeah, that's
giant guy.
That's who I thought this was. I'm like, why would the Red Wings trade him already? No, okay, Sundqvist, yeah, different player.
Yeah, so Minnesota was just quietly like acquiring Swedes in the trade deadline. So this is another Swede going up to Minnesota. Absolute depth piece. Not gonna play with Kaprizov, but I guess is a Greenway replacement. I don't know.
A cheaper. I was gonna say cheaper, but it's only $250,000.
Yeah. So.
But he is his contract is up at the end of the season compared to Greenway, who still had a little bit of time left. So.
Yeah. Pittsburgh acquired Dmitry Kulikov at 50% retained from the Anaheim Ducks for Brock McGinn, who they just put through waivers, and he passed. And a 2024 third round pick. So getting some defensive depth.
Kulikov's decent. He was an Oilers deadline acquisition a couple seasons back. And he was solid. He's a very, very quiet, more defensive minded defender, which he should help just to quiet things down, just to calm things down in Pittsburgh.
Yeah. Yeah, that It always makes sense. I mean, it's always one of the things that teams add at the deadline is just some defensive depth. So,
you always want an extra person who can play, especially when like their scratches on defense are now like Pierre-Olivier Joseph and Chad Ruedel.
Yeah.
So, like, I would put Kulikov above the two of them.
Yeah.
And
for sure.
Now they just have like a few players who can play regular NHL action if they need to swap or someone gets hurt.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. Okay, well, the next kind of more notable trade here is Arizona Coyotes acquired Brett Ritchie and Connor Mackey in exchange for Nick Ritchie and Troy Stetcher going to the Flames. So this is the first instance in the NHL where brothers were traded for each other.
Imagine that phone call when it's like, oh, hey, like Arizona calling up Brett Ritchie, or Nick, pardon me, and being like, oh, hey, you're going to Calgary. And Nick's like, oh, sweet, Brett's over there. And then they call each other, and it's like, oh.
Yeah. Like, there's some funny comments online where it's like, I guess they can just swap places to live. And
yeah, really. They can just hand off jerseys. They don't even have to change the jersey.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, well, I'll wear your number. It's fine.
Yeah, I think I sent it to you, but it was like a meme where it's like, imagine getting freed out of like Arizona, but it's at the cost of your brother. Like, he has to go suffer there.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so, I don't know. I mean, Nick Ritchie was having a good year. Mm-hmm. I don't know if he's been keeping it up as is his kind of MO throughout his time in the NHL, but he went through some periods where he was scoring some goals, and then Troy Stetcher, some defensive depth again. So, I don't know. This is, like, the only thing that Calgary really did.
They've kind of sucked this season. They're not impressing at all. They're a little bit too far out of a playoff spot to buy, but you obviously don't want to sell with the core that they have. They can't really, and they don't really want to, because it's kind of like this should be better than they are. So it's kind of like a stand pat, because, like, you know, we'll just wait for next year, where they're too good to sell, but they're too bad to buy.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty quiet for them. And then the last kind of trade that came in here was Minnesota acquiring John Klingberg at 50% retained from the Anaheim Ducks in exchange for Andre Schuster and Nikita Nesterenko's signing rights and a 2025 fourth. So pretty cheap for Klingberg, who's not having a super great year. But again, another Swede going to Minnesota here. So they added Klingberg, Sundqvist, Marcus Johansson. So, you know, they're really stocking up on and Gus Nyquist.
Mm-hmm.
So just like they had a demographic they were going for. But I think that Klingberg should come in and work the power play for them. So, I mean, that's what his strength has been in the NHL, and he's really good at holding the line. So,
and for some reason, Kalen Addison sort of fell out of favor with the coaching, so he's not been getting much of a shot on the power play anymore.
I think because he's really bad defensively.
Okay, so that would make sense. I mean, Klingberg's not amazing either, but
he's probably better than Kalen Addison.
Yeah, at this point. So in any, you know, even at the very least, they get a somewhat experienced veteran power play quarterback and possibly someone that Addison can model his NHL game after, a bit of a veteran leadership role there for Klingberg with Addison.
Yeah. Yeah. So I expect he'll be working the power play, but I think at times this season, like, Alex Goligoski and Spurgeon have also been on that power play. So we'll see if he ends up, you know, doing what we expect him to do, or if he's just filling a spot on the blue line. So yeah, those are a lot of trades.
Yeah,
so,
and that's not even all of them. That's not including the random minor leaguers that got swapped for each other.
Yeah, I mean, like, there's a lot of those. Sorry, Curtis Lazar, but we didn't mention you. So overall, is there a team that you think had a really good deadline?
The easy answer for me on that one is Boston. They gave up fair value. They acquired a lot of useful pieces for them. They gave up fair value on a lot of them. I mean, I'm an Oilers fan who's a huge fan of that Ekholm acquisition, who's shown in his first two games already that he's able to make a significant impact in underlying numbers and just the way the team performs and stuff with him on the ice. A huge fan of Oilers deadline just for that trade. As much as I know it's, like, just really skirting the rules, I like what Arizona's doing, just because they're acquiring all these draft picks. They're building up what's going to potentially be, like, the most deep and exciting and dynamic prospect pool that we've ever seen in the NHL. And it's going to come into the league right around when their new arena's built, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So that's going to be an incredible a situation, just to open that new arena with all these insane prospects and this homegrown talent and everything. That'll be pretty fun.
Yeah, I'm just looking at, like, NHL.com. Like, I was reading their article that they had earlier up there, and it's like most improved teams after the deadline, and they had, like, Carolina listed, and it's like, what are you talking about?
You got Puljujärvi and Gostisbehere.
Like, they've literally got Boston, and then it's like Carolina. It's like, I'm pretty sure they're not at the same level here.
No,
of improvements. You know, I think, like, Toronto made some pretty big changes.
Mm-hmm.
I think that it's going to be interesting to see if, like, they change too much.
That would be my concern.
The amount of guys they're bringing in and, like, mess up the team chemistry.
Yeah. I'm a huge proponent of letting chemistry develop with players over time. Like, you can't just plug a whole bunch of people in and swap lines around constantly and expect it to work out. So I think Toronto might end up being disappointing because the amount of changes are going to throw a complete wild card into their team's chemistry and the composition. But it'll be interesting to see if that many changes can be successful.
Yeah, I mean, like, I think particularly, like, forwards, like, if you're adding, like, one forward to a forward line, like, the two guys that were on that line already might have enough chemistry to, like, do something on their own. But, like, D pairings, like, if you're adding a new guy to a D pairing, like, it's, you know, 50% of the pairing. So it's, like, it could cause a lot more issues. And just, like, with the amount of defense that they've added in here, I think it might... It's more risky because, like, they added Luke Shen, Jake McCabe, Eric Gustafson. So, like, where do those guys fit in? You know, you're messing up some chemistry there. I think it could have potential to be risky, especially in, like, you know, a playoff situation where it's, like, you know, your normal D pair that or partner that you had year-round would maybe expect you to go D to D in this situation, but a new guy's, like, not prepared for that, or he's not exactly where you think he'd be. So I think that could be risky. I think the New York Rangers is a team that obviously added some pretty big names, just bolstered their offense. Going back to the Tarasenko trade, but it's insane now, like Tarasenko, Kane, Panarin on one team. And they've got Zibanejad and Kreider. So their offense is just crazy. But on the other side, like I do like what like Nashville did too. Like, you know, selling off basically everything
as much as they could. Yeah, that's it's a clear direction and a clear start to a new era.
Yeah. Yeah. Devils are kind of going all into the Meyer thing. See if they re-sign him or if they what they do, but you know, their team is a lot better now. And how about the other side though, Sean? How about any clear losers you see?
Well, the first one is the Tampa Bay Lightning. Just because of how much they gave up for Tanner Janot. That I get the situation, like they're more worried about winning now than in the future, but that doesn't make it a good trade like you and I were discussing last time. Like they're it's too much to give up for that.
Yeah, it was a weird trade. Like, sure, like I get what you're trying to do, but you could have gotten players for a lot cheaper.
Yeah.
Similar, like Greenway or something, right?
Yeah.
Like, I think Philadelphia stands out as a absolute missed opportunity whiff for them. Like, there was a rumored JVR trade to Detroit, and it just fell through, but that was it. Like that was the only thing I heard. And then I think they were shopping Provorov or something, but you know they didn't do anything,
which is not great considering that they're clearly in a rebuild. According to the messages from especially Tortorella, I think saying yeah it's gonna be hard right now. So they go and do absolutely nothing to replenish the draft picks that they gave up for some strange reason to dump out all the other contracts, and now they're just in this place of having a bad roster and nothing to replenish it. So missed opportunity to sell off a couple of decent assets there.
Yeah. So definitely surprising that they didn't make any moves. And then I think, I don't know if it's like the same as like Philly, but like Vancouver is just like,
I was going to say them too.
What are you doing? Like kind of a mixed direction.
They trade their only solid defensive defender and then bring in another offensive defender while giving up picks that would have helped them replenish their lineup in the future. It's a very unclear direction and it's very Vancouver Canucks right now, and I fail to see how it's going to benefit them in the coming years.
Yeah. I got a question for you too. Like, what do you feel about like Florida? Like, do you think that they should have done anything? Because like they kind of went for it already last year.
Yeah, well, they
left themselves pretty strapped with like things to deal, but they did like nothing.
They don't have anything to give up. That's the problem. You know, they don't have the valuable draft picks to give up to acquire anything worthwhile. They'd have to give up roster players to do so, and then you're not actually making your team any better. And considering where they are in the standings, looking at, you know, them being stuck in that seven-team race for a wild card spot, it's probably easier for them just to stand pat, because like their core, it's the same thing as Calgary. Their core is good. They're just not good this year. So they don't want to go and sell it off because they've only really had that 1 year. But they're also not in a position where they can afford to buy anything, because like they have no draft picks. They don't seem to have the strongest prospect pool now, because a bunch of them have either been brought up or traded away. They don't really have anything to do. So yeah, they kind of lost a bit because they didn't do anything to make their team better, but they also, like, what are they even going to do?
Yeah, I just thought it was interesting that they did, like, absolutely nothing to see if they would maybe sell on some, like, pending UFAs, maybe try and get something. Like, Radko Gudas, I think, was suspected to maybe be available. But, yeah, just with, like, how tight the race is in the East, it's just, like, you can just have confidence in your team, but if you're not going to make it, like, it might be a missed opportunity to have maybe potentially gotten something back for some of these guys.
I mean, if they decided they wanted to sell, like, they have a plethora of right D. Like, Brandon Montour is having an absolutely amazing season, and they probably could have gotten quite a bit for him, considering, you know, he's only $3.5 million for another season. Like you said, Radko Gudas, one of the, you know, best physical defenders in the league, $2.5 million is a UFA, like, cheap rental. You look at what Columbus and, or what other defenders kind of in his level are getting. Like, they could have gotten a first and a third out of him. But it's kind of weird. Like, I actually didn't know that about Gudas's contract, that he was up at the end of the season. Like, if they decided that they weren't going to compete but still didn't shop at least Gudas around if they didn't think they were going to be able to keep him, you know, that's a missed opportunity to get something, because now they still have no draft pick in the first round for, like, what, 3 or 4 seasons.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I just was curious what you thought about it, because there's some teams that, like you said, Calgary and them, they just kind of sat on their hands a bit, which is fine, but, you know, if you don't end up going anywhere, you should have picked a direction. But, yeah, it's kind of tough when you go all in the year before and you have, like, nothing available to deal. Like, I think they've got, like, a couple second-round picks that they could have maybe done something with, but at this point, they're probably better keeping them. So, yeah, I don't know. Any other things that stood out to you? Any of these trades that you particularly liked or thought was not super great? Any final words?
My last one, I don't really know how much of an improvement Jonathan Quick is going to be for Vegas.
Yeah.
Because LA is a team that is good at defense already. It was the goalies that were letting the team down in LA for the most part. So what is going to an approximately equal team in the standings this season going to suddenly change for Quick? You know what, you know, I don't think that's going to help a whole lot. But I also get that there weren't many goalies on the market and Vegas needed a goalie, I'm assuming, because, you know, Laurent Brossoit, Aiden Hill, and Logan Thompson, whoever's in the lineup and not hurt at any given moment, are not a playoff tandem or trio.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, they're maybe, they're unproven for sure, like Hill and Brossoit. But, you know, Vancouver Island legend Aiden Hill had a really good game Logan against Thompson, New Jersey. Like, Aiden Hill, like, that last game against New Jersey, like, 50 shots on him. He let 3 in, 47 saves, yeah, and 940, got the win. So, you know.
No, that's I got the wrong guy. That was someone else, not Logan Thompson.
Dylan Ferguson. Is he from BC?
No.
Dylan Ferguson, yeah. He got signed from Ottawa.
Yeah, Dylan Ferguson is the guy I thought of, not Logan Thompson. But I realize
it's interesting that they've had two goalies from the island in Vegas.
Is Aiden Hill from the island?
Yeah, he's from Comox.
Is he? It's got him as Calgary. Oh, there he is. Never mind. Comox. Okay. Didn't know that. That's cool.
He's got some good games. Like, you know, he's got some good numbers against like some of the best teams in the league. But then like you see him like have a bad game every once in a while. So it's like, mm-hmm.
And I realize I'm saying this as I'm a fan of a team that's going to roll into the playoffs with Stuart Skinner as the number one goalie, who has literally zero playoff experience, and Jack Campbell is the 1B.
And so, he's got some bad playoff experience.
Yeah, so I realize I'm saying that from a position of supporting a team that has, you know, the same type of goalie situation. So, mm-hmm. You know, Jonathan Quick, he's a proven playoff performer. I can see why they'd want to bring him in. If nothing else, just to be like a calming presence for the goalies on the bench, like depending who's playing.
But yeah, just like don't let it get you down, yeah, sort of thing. Yeah. I see that being his role, but yeah. His numbers are really bad this season, so yeah. I don't know. Who knows? He could turn it around. Maybe just the burning hatred in his soul for what happened to him. Maybe that like spurs him on to better performances, but I don't know, like Vegas usually goes like all out, and they didn't really make like a huge splash this year. Like they got like Barbashev and Quick.
Well, it's the same as Florida. They don't have a whole lot to give up. They do have all their firsts still, but mm-hmm. I mean, in terms of prospects, they've kind of traded all those away already.
Well, the Vegas way is to draft them and then trade them.
Exactly. They don't trade the pick. They draft the player they draft. They trade the player they drafted.
Yeah, exactly.
So since they've already traded all the ones they drafted away, pretty much, they have to draft a few more before they can do this again.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, it's. I guess just like my final comment is just that it's a bit of an arms race in the East, and all the teams that were in a spot just got like a little bit better, but like they all kind of did. So I don't know if it like dramatically swung the tide in anyone's favor. The only thing that I see is maybe Ottawa. Like, maybe they got just better enough to steal a spot from, like, the Islanders, because the Islanders made their move and then didn't really do anything else.
Yeah. They got better after their move. Like, they jumped up the standings, but they also stood still, and they're not significantly better
mm-hmm.
than the teams around them in the standings. Like, Buffalo playing at their current pace would take over the playoff spot from the Islanders just because of the amount of games played differential.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd like to see some new teams in playoffs. I'd like to see like both Buffalo and Ottawa make it. Ideally, Pittsburgh and the Islanders.
It'd be cool to see Seattle.
It would be. Yeah, it'd be very, very cool.
And they pretty much have a spot secured. Like they've got a 9-point lead over Calgary right now. For, you know, fifth in the division, and they also are still tied with Edmonton for third. So mm-hmm. Edmonton and Seattle are pretty secure in the spot. It's just deciding who's in which position.
Jared McCann became the first ever 30 goal scorer for Seattle.
He's such like a quiet player for someone who just put up 30 goals.
Yeah, I know, you wouldn't think of him as like one of the, you know, not like super high end scorers, but like that's impressive.
Mm-hmm.
He's had a very interesting career, floating from, he was in that, one of the trades that Vancouver and Florida made. I don't know if it was like the Markstrom trade or something. And then went to Pittsburgh, now expansion draft. Yeah, interesting career. But yeah, I mean, it's cool to see Seattle doing well, and I think I agree with you that it'd be pretty exciting to have them.
That wraps things up for this time here on ClapperCast. Make sure you rate and review this episode, and toss a follow or subscribe our way. For more content, you can follow us on Facebook or Instagram at ClapperCast Media or on Twitter at ClapperCast. Thank you all for tuning in, and we'll be back next week with more Hockey Talk.